Hopefully you can hear me now. I'll just check the chat and see. No audio. All right, just to confirm that you can hear me now. I know that I started out with a bit of a challenge. I'll just wait and see. Yes, good now. Very, very good. Okay, greetings. Let's see who's here. Rosebud is here. Sister Griselda, welcome to both of you. Seeing here, Nate Hendricks is here. Welcome, brother. Welcome first online. Pastor Murray is here. Welcome, brother. Bruce Ellis is here. Welcome, brother Bruce. Welcome, Chaw Jaws and JD and Pep Square. Welcome to all of you. Nice to see you. Judy and Chuck are here. Rick Four is here. How about that? Merlinine, welcome. And I think I've gotten everybody. Willie is here. Welcome, Willie. Christy Romine is here. Welcome, sister. Very, very good. And welcome to all of you who are here, but not quite signed in, but we know that you are here. We'll get into Joshua chapter 15. I'll go ahead and share my screen. And Joshua 15 is all about the distribution of the land to Joshua. And I just want you to notice here, I think you'll see my indicator. It begins last week in Joshua 14, verse 6, with Caleb being the first one to receive land in the allotment under Joshua. Joshua is given the command to distribute the land before he dies. And the very first person to receive their allotment is Caleb of the tribe of Judah. That was last week, 14, beginning in verse 6. All of chapter 15 is about the land allotted to Judah, which takes us between 14:6 to the end of chapter 15, 73 verses on the land allotments to the tribe of Judah. Next week, we don't have a study next week, but when we resume Joshua 16, next after Judah is Ephraim. So Judah is first, Ephraim's next. These are the top tribes. 10 verses to the allotment of land for Ephraim, which we'll see in chapter 16. And then chapter 17, if we look at chapter 17, this is to Manasseh. So Ephraim, then Manasseh. Manasseh is 18 verses. But Judah, 73 verses to the land allotted to Judah. So I think it gives us a sense of the significance of the land that's allotted to Judah and the role of Judah in God's plan for salvation. So let's get into chapter 15. But I just want to remind you of a couple of things we covered last week in chapter 14. And just, I want you to see this. He says, now behold, this is Caleb speaking to Joshua and going to Joshua saying, give me my land. And he says, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spoke this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. As yet, I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. Now, there's a reason why Caleb is saying this. He's saying, look, I went in, I saw the land. I said, yes, let's trust the Lord. Let's take this land. He had to wander for 40 years. He's saying he's 85 years old. And he's saying, I'm as strong today as I was the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. And basically what he's saying here is, I'm ready to fight. Let me know what my land is, and if there's any Canaanites there, I'll clear them out, because I trust God. And when he says, I'm as strong as I was then, he's also saying, I'm as faithful today as I was then. I've never doubted God's promise. And now we come down to verse 12, he says, now therefore, give me this mountain whereof the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day how the Anakim were there and that the cities were great and fenced. And so these are big cities. And, you know, I was in the UK last week and I had a chance to go to the museum, the British Museum. And I found it fascinating to study the ancient societies in Mesopotamia and the cities that were there. And I'm going to try to talk about this later. But these were very, very sophisticated cities. I had no idea. Because of the cuneiform, and they've cracked the code on how to read the cuneiform, and there's tons of discoveries they've made of these clay tablets with all of the writings there, everything from, you know, shopping lists to architectural plans and accounting records. They've been able to sort of understand that the sophistication of these cities, and that they were great and fenced. So these are fortified cities that are hard to take down. And Joshua was saying, yeah, I saw that way back then. And not only that, that these are giants. These are the Anakim. And Goliath was one of the Anakim. So these are giants. These are fierce warriors. The cities are great and sophisticated and fenced. And Joshua was saying, no problem. Just tell me what land is mine and I'm going to go and take it because I trust the Lord and I'm ready to do battle. At 85 years old, I'm ready to fight for my land. And he says, you heard that how the Anakim were there and the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord has said. He's not wasting any time at all. I know God will help me drive them out. Tell me what land, give me the boundaries, and I'm going to go and take my land. When we get to chapter 18, after allotting the land to Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh, the rest of the tribes are still waiting to inherit their land, their allotment. And Joshua is very frustrated with them. In Joshua 18 and verse 3, Joshua said unto the children of Israel, how long are you slack to go to possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers has given you? Like, what's the holdup here? So with Caleb, let's go. Tell me what land is mine. I don't care that these are great cities, that they're fenced cities, that the Anakim are in the cities. Just tell me what land is mine, and I'm ready to fight. At 85 years old, I know the Lord is with me, and I'll take the land. These other tribes, they are looking at the land like they were with the spies, and they're saying, well, the Anakim are there. These are fenced cities. These are great cities. I'm not sure if we want to do this. So you can see the difference in spirit between Caleb and the rest of these tribes. Back to Joshua 14, just as context to get into chapter 15. And Joshua blessed him and gave unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron for an inheritance. And so we are going to see many of these cities. Hebron, we know. So you can see Hebron on the map. You'll see it in relation to Jerusalem. Lachish is another great city. And then you're going to see the two and a half tribes, Reuben and Gad and half of Manasseh, are on the east side of the Jordan. But then on the west side of the Jordan, Manasseh, we're going to see this in chapter 17, Manasseh get their allotment. We're going to see in chapter 16, Ephraim get their allotment. We're in chapter 15, where Judah is getting their allotment. And you'll see when Simeon gets his allotment, it's within the boundaries of Judah. So he's going to be depending on Judah. And then you see they didn't quite take it to the coast. They should have taken all of this, but they didn't get that. But anyway, that's just giving you a sense. We're going to read through these locations. It's going to be a lot of detailed cities, many cities we don't even know where they are. But all of this, again, the emphasis is on just how important it is that we understand Judah plays a central role in God's plan for Israel and for mankind. And so Jephunneh, the son of Jephunneh gets Hebron. This is the first allotment that is assigned in the promised land, and it goes to Caleb. Hebron, therefore, became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite. And we talked about Jephunneh being a Kenizzite. He's a Canaanite or a Gentile, but he has accepted the God of Israel, and Caleb is now in the tribe of Judah. And so Caleb is recognized for his faithfulness. And so because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. And the name of Hebron before was Kirjatharba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakim. So it was named, Hebron, but before it was called Kirjatharba, after Arba, who was one of the giants. And the land had rest from war. Now we come into chapter 15, verse 1. This then was the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah by their families, or by their clans, even to the border of Edom, the wilderness of Zin, southward was the uttermost part of the south coast. And their south border was from the shore of the Salt Sea, or the Dead Sea, from the bay that looks southward. And it went out to the south side, to Ma'al Karabim, and passed along to Zin, and ascended up to the south side to Kadesh Barnea, and passed along to Hezron, and went up to Adar, and fetched a compass to Karkaa. From there it passed toward Asmon, and went out unto the river of Egypt. That's going to be the Nile River. And the goings out of that coast were at the sea. This shall be your south coast. So just again outlining the border for Joshua. Joshua's outlining for Judah. And the east border was the Salt Sea, even unto the end of Jordan. And their border in the north quarter was from the bay of the sea at the utmost part of Jordan. And the border went up to Beth Hogla, and passed along by the north of Beth Araba, and the border went to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. And the border went up toward Debir, from the valley of Achor, and so northward, looking towards Gilgal, that is before the going up to Adumim, which is on the south side of the river. And the border passed toward the waters of En Shemesh, and the goings out thereof were at Enrogel. So again, very, very detailed of the borders for Judah. And this is God's land. And he is giving it to Judah. And there's 63 verses just in this chapter alone of the allotment to Judah. And today, all the nations are saying that Judah must be removed, that this is Palestinian, quote unquote, Palestinian land. And this goes against what this is, God is saying, this is his land, and this is how he has allotted it. And the border went up by the valley of the son of Hinnom unto the south side of the Jebusite, the same as Jerusalem. So we know that Jebus is Jerusalem. These are the city that David is going to make Jerusalem the capital for Israel. But for now, it's going to, it would be Shiloh first, but the Jebusites had Jerusalem. And the border went up to the top of the mountain that lies before the valley of Hinnom westward, which is at the end of the valley of the giants northward. And the border was drawn from the top of the hill unto the fountain of the water of Nephtoah, and went out to the cities of Mount Ephron. And the border was drawn from Baalah, which is Kirjath-Jearim. And the border compassed from Baalah westward unto Mount Seir, and passed along unto the side of Mount Jearim, which is Chesalon, on the north side, and went down to Beth Shemesh, and passed on to Timnah. And the border went out unto the side of Ekron northward, and the border was drawn to Shakron, and passed along to Mount Baalah, and went out unto Jabneel. And the goings out of the border were at the sea, and the west border was to the great sea, and the coast thereof. This is the coast of the children of Judah, round about according to their families. And unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a part among the children of Judah, according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, even the city of Arba, the father of Anak, which city is Hebron. So the father of the Anakim is Arba, and he had a city, and that was now given to Caleb specifically. And Caleb drove there, or from there, the three sons of Anak, Sheshai and Ahiman and Talmai, the children of Anak. So these are giants. These are powerful people. And these are the leaders of three big clans of the Anakim. And Caleb wasted no time. This is my land. Get up. What are you doing on my land? Get off my land. And Joshua drove out the three sons of this Anak, Sheshai and Ahiman and Talmai, the children of Anak. And he went up from there to the inhabitants of Debir. And the name of Debir before was Kirjath Sefer. And Caleb said, so he's got all this land he's taking, and now he goes up to Debir. And Caleb said, he that smites Kirjath Sefer, or Debir, and takes it, to him will I give Aksha, my daughter, to wife. So he's doing battle on multiple fronts, and he's saying, we need to deal with Debir, and here's the reward for who will deal with Debir, and or Kirjath Sefer. And I'm sure his daughter was beautiful, but more importantly, I think politically, it's his daughter. And so whoever marries her is going to have a lot of power in that southern kingdom. And so he offers Gasha, his daughter, to wife. And Othniel, when we study Judges, Othniel is the first judge. So here, clearly, he's a military leader, a man of great strength and prowess. Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, took it. So he went and took down Debir. And he, Caleb, gave Othniel Aksa, his daughter, to wife. And it came to pass, as she came unto him, that she moved him to ask of her father a field. And she lighted off her donkey, and Caleb said unto her, what would you like? And she answered, give me a blessing, for you have given me a south land. Give me also springs of water. So she's very wise. The civilization depends upon water. And I'll be talking about this in the future, but the Nile River, the Euphrates, the Tigris, this is where early civilization sprung up because of water. And she's seeing she's got some land, but she needs water. So she's asking her father for springs of water as well. And he gave her the upper springs and the nether springs. So Othniel is going to be well established with this land, with water as well. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Judah, according to their families. And the uttermost cities of the tribe of the children of Judah toward the coast of Edom southward were Kabzeel and Eder and Yeager. Again, I just want to emphasize, these are very sophisticated cities. I had a sense somehow, I don't believe in evolution, obviously, but somehow I just believe that we are so much more sophisticated than the people who lived anciently in these cities. But when you check the archaeological records, these are well-developed cities, well-functioning cities. It's quite amazing how sophisticated they were. And God obviously is not against cities, because he's allowing them, apart from Jericho, which was first fruits of the Lord, he's allowing them to go in and just inherit these cities, take them over with all of the systems that they've developed and the sophistication that they've developed, take over these cities, but tear down their altars and completely destroy the people, have nothing to do with the people, but enjoy the sophistication of the cities. And so these cities are being inherited now by Judah. And Kinna and Dimona and Adada and Kadesh and Hazor and Ithna and Ziph and Telem and Bealoth and Hazor and Hadata and Kerioth and Hezron, which is Hazor, Amam and Shema and Molada. These are all these are significant cities that they're just inheriting. And Hazargada and Heshmon and Beth Palet and Hazar Shual and Beersheba and Bizjothja, Baala and Lim and Ezim and El Tolad and Chasil or Chasil and Horma and Ziklag and Madmana and Sansana and Leboth and Shilhim and Ain and Rimon. All the cities are 29 with their villages. So the cities have villages. The cities are the urban center, which is going to be fenced. It's going to have a wall to protect it, and it's going to be very sophisticated. Outside the wall, kind of think of them as suburbs, There are going to be villages which are less sophisticated, but people still are still populated there, and more rural. But again, these are significant cities. The God doesn't say, tear down the cities. You must have nothing to do with cities. Start all over again. He's like, take all of this technology, all of this sophistication, and enjoy it. But make sure you burn down the worship system. And in the valley, Eshta'ol, and Zoriah, and Ashna, and Zenoa, and Enganim, Tapua, and Dinam, Jarmuth, and Adulam, Soko, and Izekah, and Sha'raim, and Adithaim, and Gadara, and Gadarathaim, 14 cities with their villages. So we've got, 43 different cities here with their villages. Now go on, Zinan, and Hadasha, and Migdalgad, and Delid, and Mizpah, and Joktil, Lachish is one of the big cities here, Lachish, and Bozkath, and Eglon, and Kabon, and Lachmam, and Kitlish, and Gedorth, and Beth Dagon, and Naama, and Makkada, 16 cities with their villages. What do we have now? 59 cities and their villages. Libna and Ether, Ashan, and Jiftha, and Ashna, and Nezib, and Kila, and Akzib, and Meresha, 9 cities with their villages. I think I said 63, we have 72 now. Ekron with her towns and her villages, from Ekron even unto the sea, all that lay near Ashdod with their villages, Ashdod with her towns and her villages, Gaza with her towns and her villages. So again, a lot of dispute about Gaza, belongs to Judah. Unto the river of Egypt and the great sea and the border thereof, and in the mountains, Shamir and Jatir and Soko and Dana and Kirjath Sana, which is Debir, and Anab and Estemo and Anim and Goshen and Holon and Gilo, 11 cities with their villages, Arab and Duma and Eshin and Janum and Beth Tupwa and Ephika and Humta and Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron, and Zior, 9 cities with their villages, Maon, Carmel, Ziph, and Juta, and Jezreel, and Jaktiim, and Zenoa, Cain, Gibeah, Timnah, 10 cities with their villages, Halhul, Bethzur, Gedor, Marath, Bethonoth, and Eltekon, 6 cities with their villages, Kirjath Baal, which is Kirjath Jearim, Rabbah, 2 cities with their villages. In the wilderness, Beth Araba, Medim, Sakaka, Nibshan, and the city of Salt, must be near the Dead Sea, and Engedi, 6 cities with their villages. As for the Jebusites, so you can, I lost count there, but it's over 100 cities. And again, I just want to emphasize that these cities are very sophisticated. They have schools. They have, obviously, have worship temples. They have significant building projects. They have sanitation. They have houses. They have all kinds of different institutions. The houses have furniture, much like us. They have chairs with fireplaces. They have tables. They live very similar. I'm quite shocked when I was doing the research. Very, very similar lives to us. And I guess the kind of analogy that I would draw is for those of us who are, say over 50, we knew how we grew up. If we grew up in cities, the cities were sophisticated, but they didn't have the technology we have today. Wireless is a fairly recent technology that we didn't have growing up. Mobile phones we didn't have growing up. And so we had a phone, we had telephone technology, but it was tethered. And so we made phone calls. Today we make phone calls, but it's untethered, it's wireless. But the way the city runs is more or less the same. You know, before, you know, we didn't have websites. And let's say you had a parking ticket. and you had to go and pay by mail or go in person. Today you can go online and take care of your tickets or your utilities. So the technology changes, but what we do as human beings in an urban area is more or less the same. And shockingly, these cities that were set up right after the flood were very, very similar in sort of systems and processes to what we do today. It's actually quite shocking. So all of the, and so God is not against urbanization, because all of these cities you just heard, just for Judah alone, they're to inherit the cities and enjoy the cities. And so now he concludes this section saying, as for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah could not drive them out. So there was a problem there, and you know, Caleb wasn't given Jebus, but the children of Judah couldn't drive them out. But the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem unto this day. And that's how the allotment to Judah ends, which is problematic. Because God is not against the cities. He's against the worship system. And they're to go in and tear down all these altars. And they're also to completely eliminate the people. Have nothing to do with them. And we hear this conclusion that they dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem to this day. This is a problem. And again, the cities are very, very similar to the way our cities run today. What's different is today we're more or less a secular society. But in the past, you had churches everywhere in the West. It was considered, these were considered Christian nations. There's like a church on every corner. Every Sunday, the church bells ring. Everybody goes to church. That would give you a better sense of the way these cities ran, but not completely. These cities ran spiritually. Everybody who lived in these cities, nobody was confused. Everyone who lived in the city understood the worship, how significant the worship system was, and that the city existed because of the gods and because of the goodwill of the gods. And so the worship system was to make sure that the gods are not angry, that the gods are pleased with us, and that the king who represents the gods is in good favor with the gods. And that's going to give us victory over our enemies. It's going to give us defensive capabilities to protect our cities, but also offensive capabilities to go and take other cities and expand the empire or the city state. And every single human being understood we exist because of the gods. And so this life in the city, the worship system was completely integrated into daily life. And to dwell with these people means that you're dwelling with their worship system. And that obviously now is going to, it's sort of setting us up for the downfall of Judah and introducing what's going to happen when we get to the book of Judges. So let's continue with Ephraim. So that was Judah. Now we'll go to Ephraim's allotment. Which is chapter 16. And the lot of the children of Joseph, that's Ephraim and Manasseh, fell from Jordan by Jericho unto the water of Jericho unto the east, to the wilderness that goes up from Jericho throughout Mount Bethel, and goes out from Bethel to Luz, and passes along unto the borders of Arki to Ataroth, and goes down westward to the coast of Japhleti, and the coast of Beth Horon, the nether, and to Gezer, and the goings out thereof at the sea, are at the sea. So the children of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim, took their inheritance. And the border of Ephraim, according to their families, was thus. So again, Judah's first, Ephraim second, Manasseh's third, and then everybody else. So very, very clear about the tribal ranking and authority here. And the border of the children of Ephraim according to their families, was this. Even the border of their inheritance on the east side was Atarathadar unto Beth Horon, the upper. And the border went out toward the sea to Michmetha on the north side, and the border went about eastward unto Ta'anath Shiloh, and passed by it on the east to Genoha. And it went down from Genoha unto Ataroth and to Narath, and came to Jericho, and went out at Jordan. The border went out from Tapua westward to the river Cana, and the goings out thereof were at the sea. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Ephraim by their families. And the separate cities for the children of Ephraim were among the inheritance of the children of Manasseh, all the cities with their villages. And they did not drive out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites unto this day, and serve under tribute. So the distribution to Judah ends with the fact that they didn't drive out the Jebusites. The distribution to Ephraim ends with they didn't drive out the Canaanites. This is why Judges is as problematic as it is. We sort of jumped into Judges without doing Joshua first. If we did Joshua first, we'd have an understanding of why Judah and Ephraim, or all of Israel, became so corrupted and infected. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. So that is Ephraim, and Ephraim ends with not driving out all of the Canaanites. Let's now look, and we'll just finish here with chapter 17, with Manasseh. There was also a lot for the tribe of Manasseh, for he was the firstborn of Joseph. To wit, so even though he's the firstborn of Joseph, Ephraim comes first, because the greater blessing was on Ephraim. For wit, Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh, the father of Gilead, because he was a man of war, therefore he had Gilead and Bashan. So Manasseh's firstborn was a great warrior. There was also a lot for the rest of the children of Manasseh by their families or by their clans. For the children of Abiezer, and for the children of Helek, and for the children of Ezreel, and for the children of Shechem, and for the children of Hefer, and for the children of Shemidah. These were the male children of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, by their families. But Zelophehad, the son of Hefer, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, had no sons. He just had daughters. And these are the names of his daughters: Mahla, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, Mahla and Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. And they came near before Eleazar the priest, and before Joshua the son of Nun, and before the princes, saying, "The Lord commanded Moses to give us an inheritance among our brethren. Therefore, according to the commandment of the Lord, he gave them an inheritance among the brethren of their father." So he's just saying within the Torah, there is provision for daughters to inherit. And there fell 10 portions to Manasseh beside the land of Gilead and Bashan, which were on the other side of Jordan, because the daughters of Manasseh had an inheritance among his sons, and the rest of Manasseh's sons had the land of Gilead. And the coast of Manasseh was from Asher to Michmetha, that lies before Shechem, and the border went along on the right side unto the inhabitants of Entepua. Now Manasseh had the land of Tapua, but Tapua on the border of Manasseh belonged to the children of Ephraim. So right on the border, part of it belongs to Ephraim, part to Manasseh. And the coast descended unto the river Cana, southward of the river. These cities of Ephraim are among the cities of Manasseh. So within the territory of Manasseh, Ephraim has some cities. Just as we saw, Simeon is within the land of Judah. The coast of Manasseh, but in the case of Simeon, it's all of Simeon is within Judah. But here with Ephraim, they have some cities within Manasseh. are among the cities of Manasseh. And the coast of Manasseh also was on the north side of the river, and the outgoings of it were at the sea. Southward it was Ephraim's, and northward it was Manasseh's. And the sea is his border. And they met together in Asher on the north, and in Issachar on the east. So it's just the borders are on top of each other. So there's no land in between. And Manasseh had in Issachar and in Asher Beth Shean and her towns, and Iblim and her towns, and the inhabitants of Dor and her towns, and the inhabitants of Endor and her towns, and the inhabitants of Tanakh and her towns, and the inhabitants of Megiddo and her towns, even three countries. Yet the children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites would dwell in that land. So this is just really repeatedly, they fail to remove the people, which was a very, very clear instruction. And we see it's going to lead to judges. It's going to lead to judges. And I think this is very instructive for us that nothing wrong with cities, nothing wrong with urban life. They're inheriting all these cities. And it's, you know, the land is different. Some land is flat. Some is mountainous. There's different regions depending on where they are. Some is close to water. Some is not. So all the different attributes of the land as you go through, it's all different. And the cities are going to be different as well because they develop independently. And then as you see the, particularly the invention of writing, that changes a lot. The cuneiform in Mesopotamia and hieroglyphics in Egypt, when they develop this writing, it allows them to really expand their empires, to have more sophisticated systems to expand. And also with the introduction of the Iron Age, they're able to consolidate these different cities into kingdoms, and ultimately into empires. But the cities develop independently. There's a model, there's a pattern that they're working from, but the different area, the regions are different, the geography is different, and the people are different, and the way they construct their cities is going to be slightly different. And so they're inheriting all these different cities, and depending on your tribe, what you inherit is going to be different. But they're going to inherit all of this land. And unfortunately, Judah couldn't drive out the Canaanites. Ephraim couldn't drive out the Canaanites. Manasseh fails to drive out the Canaanites. But the Canaanites would dwell in that land. Yet it came to pass, when the children of Israel were waxing strong, that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. And this again is a clue for us to what leads to judges, the corruption, the abominations that Israel engages in judges, they learn from these people. And the book of Leviticus, the holiness code, is all about avoiding the things that these people do to worship their gods, to please their gods. And yes, they put them under tribute, but that means that your children are mixing with their children. It means that you're observing what they do, that they're influencing you. And the children of Joseph spoke unto Joshua, saying, why have you given me but one lot and one portion to inherit, seeing I'm a great people, for as much as the Lord has blessed me hitherto? So this is the children of Joseph, that is Ephraim and Manasseh. They're frustrated. They don't believe they have enough land, because they are very prosperous, very big tribe, and so they've got their land, but it's not enough. And Joshua, he just sees right through them. Joshua answers them, if you be a great people, so you're a great people, you need more land. Well, if you're a great people, then get you up to the wood country and cut down for yourself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the giants, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for you. So this is really interesting. And I think this is sort of what my thinking was, that they were going into this land and they would have to go into the woods, into the forest, kind of what you see the Mennonites and the what are the other folks called? The Mennonites and the, forget, it begins with an A. It's on the tip of my tongue. Somebody will help me in the chat, I'm sure. Anyway, what they do is they go into Fort. They like, where's some land that nobody wants? And within a matter of a year, they've cleared the trees, they've laid down roads, they've built houses, they've built churches, and before you know it, there's civilization. And it was nothing but forest. And they had to, you know, go up the rivers and hike and you know, go into the deepest woods where nobody wants it. And they'll just create civilization. And so I kind of had that image in my mind when Joshua's going into the promised land that, yeah, they're fighting these people, but it's a bunch of primitive people and there's just woods everywhere. Not so at all. Not so at all. They're going into this land that, you know, we see the Tower of Babel where they're building this city and they understand how to build cities and God frustrates them. But they understand architecture, they understand engineering, they understand plumbing, they understand how to build. And God frustrates them and separates them. And so that was in Mesopotamia. And so in Mesopotamia now you have very sophisticated city systems that are being built, and then they're going into Canaan, they're spreading out. And they're building all these different cities, different tribes, different peoples, but they know how to build cities. And now Israel's going in to take over these running cities, these running systems. But then Joshua is saying, well, if what we're giving you is not enough and you say you're a great people, if you're such a great people, go into the forest. Let me just check the chat and see if somebody told me. The Amish. That's it. Yes, the Amish. I knew it began with an A. I just couldn't remember the Amish. So, yeah. So the Mennonites and the Amish, they don't fool around. They're like, okay, they're not afraid of hard work. And they're not afraid of mosquitoes, right, or bugs. They just go in. And within a year, certainly by within 2 years, 3 years, the whole thing is transformed. And so Joshua is saying to these people, if you're such a great people, put your money where your mouth is. And yeah, no problem. There's giants there and parasites there, but you said you're a great people. Just go and conquer them and then spread into the woods. If Mount Ephraim be too narrow for you. And the children of Joshua said, the hill is not enough for us. Oh, sorry, the children of Joseph said, that's Ephraim and Manasseh's clans, the hill is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites that dwell in the land, and I just, sorry, looking at my caption, let me just make sure I update this to 15 to 17. Didn't think I would get through chapter 17, but it's really just listing cities that they're taking over. So we just want to get through this. And all the Canaanites that dwell, the hill is not enough for us. And all the Canaanites that dwell in the land of the valley, listen to this, have chariots of iron. Both they who are of Beth Shean and her towns and they who are of the valley of Jezreel. This is really faithless talk, but you're seeing here we're entering into the Iron Age, or we're in the Iron Age. So there's the Stone Age, then there's the Bronze Age, and then there's the Iron Age. And these are different types of technologies. But when we get to the Iron Age, iron is like, bronze is no match for iron. And those that adopted iron technology earlier are going to be far more powerful. And the technology to develop chariots of iron, this is like a, back in, you know, sort of like the tank of their day. They're going to be unstoppable. And so Ephraim's saying, we're a great people, but the Canaanites have chariots of iron. So we don't know what to do there. And Joshua spoke unto the house of Joseph, even unto Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, you're a great people. You have great power. You shall not have one lot only, but the mountain shall be yours, for it's a forest, and you shall cut it down, and the outgoings of it shall be yours, for you shall drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots, and though they be strong. So Joshua and Caleb were just cut from a different cloth. And you see sort of the privileged, entitled nature of Ephraim and Manasseh. Like, we're a great people. We need more. You know, you're giving too much to the other tribes. Give more to us. And Joshua is saying, yeah, you're right. You're a great people. No problem. Take down the Canaanites. And the fact that they have this technology of iron chariots, don't let that bother you, because you have Jehovah. So as strong as they are, and this is a really important point as well, because just going back into the mindset of the people of this day, when he says, though they have iron chariots and though they be strong, you will drive them out. That is a very spiritual comment, because their chariots of iron that they believe in, they're trusting in those chariots of iron because they're trusting in their gods. They're trusting in their human sacrifice. It's really amazing. So what Joshua is saying to Ephraim and Manasseh is, we serve Jehovah. And so go and take them down, drive them out. The fact that they have chariots of iron, this is irrelevant. They're going to believe that their gods and their sex worship of their gods is going to give them victory. You need to show them that they're worshiping false gods, and that Jehovah is the greater God, and that the whole interpretation of how life works anciently, there's no such thing as atheism. And everybody understands that there's a spiritual world. And these people, their city life, it's fully integrated into worshiping these pagan gods, these false gods. And they have confidence that their God will give them victory. And Joshua is saying to Ephraim and Manasseh, believe in Jehovah and go in and take the land, and stop complaining to me. You have it within your ability to take more land. So that is Joshua chapters 15 to 17. We need to get through the distribution or the allotment of the land to the other tribes, and also to Levi, that they didn't really get land, but they did get some cities. We need to get through that. And then the whole chapter is going to start to come to a nice conclusion. So God willing, we'll be doing that in a couple of weeks. No Bible study next week, no Wednesday night Bible study next week. However, having said that, last year during the days of unleavened bread, I did a Bible study every evening. And I'd like to do that again this year, God willing. I did start last year on the first day of unleavened bread, but where we meet as a combined group, it's far from where I live, so I had to leave there early. I don't think we stayed for a meal, or if we stayed for a meal, it was just we left very early to get back so I could do the study. I think this year I won't start on the first day of unleavened bread, but God willing, on the second day of unleavened bread, every evening we will have a Bible study. And I'm planning to, and it's been on my mind for a while, to cover the book of Lamentations. It's just 5 chapters. And I think we'll be able to get through that safely through the days of unleavened bread. So hopefully you'll be able to join us for that. If not, the study will be in the archive, but I will, God willing, be going live beginning on the second day of unleavened bread every evening at 7:30, except for the last day of unleavened bread. This coming Sabbath, hopefully you'll be able to join us. So we did have our campaign. Thank you for your prayers. I think that went very, very well. And they did a great job last week. I was traveling, as I mentioned, and we did a 3-part series. It just went very, very well, and we appreciate the support that we got from our evangelism team that's in Toronto. And we're planning to do this more often. So we're just going to start planning our next campaign, and we'll do it slightly differently, but we've got the mechanism to make all of this work, and we liked how it worked. So we will be doing that this coming Sabbath. Hopefully you'll be able to join us, and God willing, Deacon Jan will be bringing us the sermon, and we're going to return back to our standard format of services at 1:30. I'll go ahead and I'll check the chat to see if there is anything I need to respond to. And I don't think so. Very, very good. Thank you very much, brethren. And so, God willing, I will see you again. We will see you again on Sabbath. We're wishing you all the very best. I'm sure we'll get another chance to wish you all the best for the Passover season and the holy days when we meet on Sabbath. But just in case, I want to wish you all the very, very best as you prepare for Passover and then the days of unleavened bread. And I am planning, God willing, to release my book on the first day of unleavened bread. I love the book. I think you will love it as well. It is very, very clear, and I think it's going to be very, very helpful to all of us. God bless you all. What a mighty God we serve. We look forward to seeing you, God willing, on the Sabbath. God bless you all.